Hi there, welcome to Charles in Charge. It is Sunday, the 5th of December 2021. No intro music this morning, it's actually more or less the middle of the night. Because I wanted to talk to you on today's podcast, which is called Priming, about my own personal experiences regarding how evil and private and determined people who would do these things to us are. I wanted to talk to you about my own personal experiences with paedophiles. So there will be a warning on this podcast. Firstly, I will talk about my own experience and then how I could not escape this world, even as an adult, even when I'd moved literally to the other side of the globe. So I grew up in the UK, in Worcestershire, and I had a difficult childhood, which I didn't understand for the most part, because I had that warring parents scenario, and there was a lot of arguing, and it was very, very difficult for me, and I wasn't an only child, so I wasn't the only person there. However, I was the oldest child. Now, the first thing that growing up in a household with warring parents did for me was that it stole my childhood. I had to grow up very, very quickly. I had to be the grown-up that my grown-ups didn't seem capable of being. Now, my parents were very young when they had me. They were 20, so perhaps that was part of it. But later on, there were other pointers and facts that emerged. So for the first 5 years of my life, I was forced to be way more mature than a normal child under the age of five would be. It's evident in every photograph of me, except for one or two where I'm outside in the sunshine playing. You can see that I am an extremely serious child, and that's probably because I witnessed some extremely serious things. And I talk about my life pre being 5 years old and post being 5 years old because of what happened to me when I was five. I had a next door neighbour who was a little girl who was roughly my age, perhaps she was a year younger, and our gardens bordered each other and we often used to play. And she would pop into my house and I would pop into hers for, I guess, what modern families call playdates. One day when I was on a playdate at my friend's house next door, just next door from my own home, a very quick and sudden assault happened on me where suddenly my friend from next door, who I was playing with in her front room, sitting room, a room that had couches in it, Suddenly my friend and her brother were no longer in the room, and I heard a door slam and a key turn. And I was pushed by my friend's father very hard against my chest until my little body fell on the floor behind the couch. This adult man then dug his hands into his pockets and pulled out a sort of dusty, furry, reasonably disgusting chupa chup lolly, the sort that come with a stick. And he put it into my mouth, and I tried to stop him by closing my teeth, because by this time he was on all fours above me, and he put his fingers and hands in my mouth, and they just smelt and tasted revolting, and forced my teeth apart, forced this chupa chup lolly into my mouth, and then jammed it into the back of my throat using the stick, cutting off my windpipe essentially. And I could then only breathe through my nose, but more importantly, I couldn't scream. He then held his hand over my mouth in sort of a suffocating way to hold the stick there. And so I couldn't get to it because I was flailing and slapping him with my arms. This man, my next door neighbor's father, then sexually assaulted me at the age of 5. Quite a strange thing happened to me, and I've referred to this experience in my fiction novels, where I left my small body and I rose above what was happening and found myself floating on the ceiling looking down. And obviously looking down, all I could see was him and my feet sticking out. I'm not sure how long that went on for. But once I came out of myself, I didn't feel any pain. But I felt almost as if the air had a suspension, life stood still. Because my childhood was ending. And everything I believed grown-ups and the world to be went with it. And I realize I'm not the only one who's experienced this, but these awful experiences shape who we are. And it's very relevant, and I'll explain later why I'm telling you this. I remember afterwards him saying to me that if I told anyone, he'd kill my dad. And I guess I must have re-entered my body somehow, and the next memory I have is walking through out of his gate at the bottom of the garden. And as soon as the mechanism that locks the gate clanked, suddenly my body could feel the pain of what had happened to me, and that was the first time I'd felt it. So, shaking and frightened, I just went home, went upstairs to bed, buried myself under my blankets, and stayed there for a long time. No one came to check on me because, well, I often spent a lot of time on my own in my room. as I said, I'd had to be an adult from a very young age. And I basically felt sick and sore for days. Obviously, that changed me quite a lot as a human being. And I always felt very different. But more worryingly, what happens when you've been a child of sexual abuse by a paedophile is that you feel like suddenly you're marked, suddenly somehow other paedophiles know. It's very strange and I can't put my finger on it. I also grew up wondering why my parents didn't realize or notice that something was wrong with me. But they apparently didn't. Then when I was 9 years old, I remember a very attractive girl, much older, 15 or 16 years old. I was nine. And she used to walk past our house a lot, alone. She was sort of like a young Elizabeth Taylor. And she would always stop if my mother was gardening, and she would always say, if you ever need a babysitter, let me know. I'm babysitting for other children in the area. And she would glance over at me, and I always felt sort of instantly paralyzed because I instinctively knew that this female wished to do me harm. And then my parents' marriage broke down, and my mother actually did have cause to need this babysitter. And I said, no, you know, I don't want her to babysit for me. But sadly, she did. And she sexually assaulted me when I was nine. It was a horrendous experience. Because it almost solidified in my mind that what had happened to me twice was probably normal for some people. And again, I went on with my life and lived my life wondering why my parents didn't protect me, why nobody else seemed to know. When these acts were so violent and so abusive, and one had happened next door, and one had happened in my own home. Then I grew up and unsurprisingly decided to leave home at a relatively young age and move to London. I'll be honest, I couldn't get away from Worcestershire quick enough. I felt different to everyone else. I felt broken. I was convinced I was trash, nothing special, damaged goods, and somehow guilty about what had happened to me, as if there must have been something I had done. To fall victim to these people. I must have attracted them to me in some way as a child. And so I went to London and I went to London on a wing and a prayer. I dropped out of college and got on a National Express coach with very little money and headed to the Big Smoke. Started off in a bedsit in Cricklewood in London, not a great area. Was mugged by drunks and really just took that kind of thing in my stride because, well, I'd always been attacked. So I always felt throughout my life that I was simply just waiting for the next attack. Then I was surprised to find lots of nice things happened to me. I think because I wasn't starry-eyed, I wasn't driven by fame or money or any of that. I was just someone who wanted to work hard. However, that working hard took shape. And I did quite well as a model. I mean, it made sense to me. I had somehow drawn people to me, even as a child, albeit with disastrous outcomes for me. But here I was facing a situation where I could earn a very decent living doing that. I was away from the place that held so many painful memories for me. And I began travelling the world on other people's money as a model, flying business class to places like Australia, Spain, America, France, Bahrain, Turkey, Greece. For a while, despite the fact that I spent years and years alone in hotel rooms, alone in airports waiting at gates for delayed flights. That was my peace. That was the peace I created for myself. Always busy, always moving, perhaps running, never being in the same place for very long. And then I had children. And found I wasn't very successful with relationships. I never felt understood by my husbands. I never felt loved. I never felt cherished. I never felt valued. But I really never felt understood. Now I do. Now I'm in a safe place, so no need to worry about me. I have an amazing man in my life now who does understand me. But before I met this man, and while I was still in a difficult marriage, I was contacted by the police in the UK to tell me that my biological father, who I hadn't seen since I was 11, from the time he'd left us. This wasn't a see daddy every other weekend scenario. This was, he's gone and I won't be seeing him again. I did see him at my brother's wedding briefly when I was 21. But my relationship, albeit flimsy and virtually non-existent with my father, had ended at the age of 11 when he walked out. And so, of course, I was very, very upset when I got contacted by the police in the UK to tell me that my biological father had passed away and his new partner was trying to contact me to let me know. I had very mixed feelings about it, understandably. And it's always sad when you get news like that. But I was in Australia and there was very little I could do, and I hadn't had a relationship with my father. I had some very odd memories of him. I remember climbing into bed with him and my other sibling on Sunday mornings in the 1970s. So I was under 10 years old. And at that time, one of the Sunday newspapers in the UK were putting magazines inside the newspaper. It's so crazy how some of these appalling things have gone on over the generations. Really just added to a lot of problems. So one of the Sunday papers, one of the tabloids, I believe, had an insert in the 70s for a while in their newspapers called Man and Woman Magazine. That's how I remember it. And it was basically a sort of illustrated Kama Sutra for parents, for adults, for grown-ups. And I remember being sat up in bed with my father, and he was showing me the magazine. And I was a child. And I remember having already experienced abuse, that something was not right. Something was in fact very wrong with my dad. And I realized it was probably the reason my parents' marriage wasn't going to work out. I guess I just, as a child, I just kept getting hit with behavior from adults that just put me in suspended animation. I just became frozen, is the only word I can use to describe it, where you have to think to breathe. Everything slows down, and your innate human instinct becomes honed. This is why I'm who I am. Because I've been around a lot of danger in my life, and my innate instincts for it, to see it and sense it and smell it and taste it in the air, were honed. I can only assume in some some biological way of trying to keep me safe. I guess that's what instincts are. It's hard to describe. But as I said, I was always waiting for the next attack. And so after I got the news that my father had died in the UK, his partner, his longtime partner, said that she had some stuff for my sibling and I, and would we like to come and go through it and get some photographs? And so family members went to his place of residence to obtain these items in case there was something we might want. She felt that we might be comforted in some way in the knowledge that he had kept lots of photos of us as children, even though he had chosen not to be part of my life, and I essentially grew up fatherless and remain so. However, the family member that attended was shocked by what they found. They found that my father and his partner had actually been living in separate bedrooms, and the bedroom that he had been living in was locked with a padlock. And when the family member went through his belongings to apparently retrieve childhood photos that might be of importance to us, they found lots of photographs that shouldn't be there, that told a story about a man who was now deceased, that was undeniable proof that none of us had actually known who this person was at all. I started to question everything. I started to question the next door neighbour who used to raise his hand and wave at my father over the fence all the time. And they seemed to have a camaraderie, a friendship, an understanding that it was absolutely fine for our children to go into each other's homes. And so when some of this material was recovered by family members, I started to get a creepy feeling that, and I don't know, perhaps I'm wrong, but that I had been given to my next door neighbour. And perhaps I'm wrong about that. I can't possibly know, because these people run incredibly secret societies. The family members were then given a key to a locked garage, and inside the locked garage was more evidence that it was extremely likely that my father was a paedophile. So there I'd been my entire life, languishing inside the knowledge that I had been the victim of paedophiles, that I somehow felt like I had a label on me and that they knew every creepy grown-up that had ever come into contact with me as a small child. Would smile and nod like they knew. And I had to make damn sure that I was never alone with them. These kind of crimes are now trying to be normalized. They are trying to add it to the list of LGBTQI, whatever. But that's not what this is. This is power and control. This is sick. This is more prevalent than you think it is. Please don't assume that you live in a safe world. Well, now you're finding out you don't, but we never have. And there was a lot of priming and grooming of myself that went on when I look back and I realize, and it's definitely why I was shown magazines, inappropriate magazines, at a young age. And that's why my innate instincts are firing on red alert with everything that is happening right now. When I see pictures of small children wearing face masks, and governments initially said this is a temporary measure, and now they're trying to make it permanent, I hope you know that as of yesterday, on that day in 1798, yesterday in 1798, William Pitt brought in income tax as a temporary measure. And here we are today. What's interesting about the people that are doing this to us and the way that my instincts are firing because of it is that they live in extremely secret societies and private worlds. Until death, past death, and whatever anyone finds out about them after death, they clearly don't care, because they don't seem to make any efforts to clear away their wrongdoings or the evidence of it before they pass. But what's really shocking for me is that a lot of the partners of these people, the wives usually, let's be honest, say things like, oh, it doesn't matter now, it was an awful long time ago. Oh, well, he's dead now, it doesn't matter. Well, I'm here to tell you it does matter. These people live in these private worlds and these secret societies. And they are the people now seeking to strip our privacy away. They are the people wishing to vaccinate our children. They are the people destroying families, livelihoods, societies, healthcare. And they have no conscience about it. And I hope and I pray that when you look at some of these psychopaths, if you see the recent clip of Justin Trudeau addressing 5 to 11-year-olds, about vaccination, if your flags are not firing on red alert, then perhaps you've had a very lovely life. But I am here to tell you, as a survivor, that if you even feel the smallest amount of something's not right here, I would beg you, for the sake of humanity, not to ignore that instinct. This has been Charles in Charge. I'll see you next time.